FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz, and it is August 15th, 2017. Well, if you've noticed, the trade deficit with the rest of the world has gone up by nearly 11% for the first half of the year. Trump talked big on trade when he was running for president. Results haven't started occurring yet, haven't started happening, but with all the opposition in Congress and everything else, who knows when the swamp, if ever, will be drained and the country can then again compete on an even playing field. Well, someone who's got a strong opinion about it is Jeff Ferry, who is a research director at the Coalition for a Prosperous America. And Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, Carrie. It's good to be here.
So, trade deficit not improving. Is this a sign of things to come? Do you see any policies that Trump is pursuing that will actually make a difference? Or do we just wait for the currency to collapse and then institute reforms?
I don't think waiting is a good idea. I think that we need to do something about this. And I think there are some hopeful signs. And the numbers show that the trade deficit this year is running at 10% worse than last year. So we're on track for $550 billion trade deficit. We've run trade deficits for 41 consecutive years. And every trade deficit means dollars leaving this country to purchase goods and employ people and generate revenue and profit for overseas companies, which really should be going at home and generating jobs and revenue for people here in this country. And we do need to do something about it. Yesterday was a very hopeful sign. The president signed an executive order which empowers Robert Lighthizer, the international trade executive, to go ahead and do an investigation under Section 301 of China's intellectual property practices. Now, what that means is that China has been engaging really for decades in practices which pretty much enable them to steal, to take without compensation, the intellectual property of our companies, that our companies have spent literally decades developing and perfecting. And some of them are patents and some of them are know-how and not patented. But either way, here in this country, you pay for those rights. And those intellectual property rights are considered the crown jewels of many companies. But China's created a structure within its own country, entirely legal, that lets it take those rights. And we need to do something about that. And what President Trump signed yesterday could be the first step towards doing something. It's an investigation, which I think will take several months. And when that investigation is concluded, it's almost certain it's going to find positively that these practices are in violation of American law. And therefore, the federal government is empowered to do something, such as tariffs against Chinese goods or restrictions on what American companies can actually do, what sort of deals they can enter into with Chinese companies. So I'll pause there and let you ask me a question and I'll explain more.
Yeah, well, there's a lot there for sure. So we know that, in certain areas, and I will tell you this from personal experience, they've definitely cracked down on consumer goods, designer goods, all the top designers. It's, you have to go like in the middle of the night to a market, or there's secret rooms in these markets for people selling knockoffs. But that really is the least of the problem. It's these technology patents that they rip off, and the trademark theft, not as much as it was. Copyright, I didn't see them selling a whole bunch of latest movies to be released. But then again, the latest crop of movies is so bad, nobody wants it for free, let alone to pay for it. So, I can't say there. This season, if you're not aware, this season's bumper crop of summer movies has been a dismal failure, worst box office in 25 years. What I'm saying, though, is copyrights, trademarks, they appear to be more compliant. It's really the patent aspect that's quite insidious, isn't it?
Yeah, let me explain what, because people toss around these terms like theft, and I think people, the public can get confused about what we're talking about. And, there is a problem you're referring to of genuine theft, of actually breaking into Disney's website, Disney's internal network, and stealing the actual file for the video and selling it in places like China. That's a real theft problem, and that's a terrible thing, and then, we should do something about that. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about here is a situation where China has been saying for decades, if you want to sell automobiles or handbags or airplanes in China, you've got to set up a joint venture. And for example, Boeing has three joint ventures, at least that I counted, with Chinese aerospace manufacturers and other companies involved in the aerospace business. And as a result of that joint venture, sharing all the knowledge of how do you build a Boeing 737, for instance, these Chinese companies get to learn all that without paying for either the patents or the know-how. You know, when Boeing sells in Europe, it doesn't set up joint ventures. It sets up a Boeing sales office and it sells to British Airways or Air France or whoever it may be. And if its competitors like Airbus said, explain to us how you build the Boeing 737, Boeing would laugh in their face. They don't do that in China. Why not? Because the Chinese government says you can't sell a single airplane unless you set up a joint venture and manufacture together with a Chinese company. Now, it hasn't happened to Boeing yet, but we've seen it with other companies where after several years, the Chinese half of the joint venture says, thank you very much. We now know what we need. And they kick out the American company and sell themselves. And this is under Chinese law. This is legal. And the Chinese government have said, the Chinese Communist Party has been very clear. It believes in indigenous local production. It wants certain sectors like aerospace and automobiles. It wants to make its own products and not be dependent upon American products. So a company like Boeing is caught in a vice. If it wants to sell in China, which after all is the second biggest market in the world, it's got to agree to Chinese terms. It's got to go and hold press conferences and talk about how delighted it is with its Chinese partners. But behind the scenes, Boeing knows that in 10 years, it's likely to get kicked out of China. And what that means for Boeing shareholders and all the folks in America who work for Boeing is pretty bleak and negative. So that's what I mean by intellectual property theft. It's under American concepts, that's outright theft. Under Chinese law, that's the way they're doing business today. And this is something new in the world. I mean, I've said it before that we can't, just because they're communists, we can't equate them to the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union couldn't seem to manufacture anything efficiently. You know, you can still go and find yourself an old Yugo or a Trabant, if you don't believe me, and see what a mess they made of production. But the Chinese are much smarter people. I mean, as you know, every single iPhone you buy is made in China, and they're well-made products. So we've got a problem here with the Chinese who want to be indigenous producers of virtually every serious, important manufactured good, including goods that have defense uses. And we need to respond. And that's what I'm looking to the federal government to do.
Yeah. And it seems like Trump is serious about this. And there is an argument to be made. Is what they're doing legal under the World Trade Organization apparatus?
Yeah, now that's a very good question. I don't believe it is legal under the World Trade Organization rules. But I have to tell you, I don't have a lot of confidence that bringing an action at the WTO would solve our problems. That's why we at the Coalition for Prosperous America tend to favor unilateral American action. I mean, explain what we do and defend it in the WTO and any other international forum. Because frankly, when I talk to knowledgeable people in places like Germany and Japan, I get the same signals. You know, they're very, very worried about the Chinese obsession with indigenous production. And the rest of the world has to catch up and start responding. And no, I don't think the WTO is the best place to respond, because these international bureaucrats, they'll hold long lunches and discuss it for 3 years and then issue a decision which the Chinese government will ignore. We've got the power, we've got the power to sit down with Boeing and of many other companies. And I'm just using Boeing as an example. And I'm using Boeing because I think their technology is first class. And as an American, I'm very proud of Boeing. So, don't get me wrong. They're not the problem themselves. They are a victim of this situation along with hundreds of other world-class American companies. So we need to take action unilaterally, I would say to you.
So, Jeff, let's say we do take action and we just put tariffs or just stop the trade or forbid our companies from doing it, what's going to happen then? I mean, are we going to have a trade war with China over this? Is it worth having a trade war?
So it's not a trade war. We're going to have a new trading environment. But make no mistake, it's the Chinese that have created a new trading environment, right? They are the second largest economy in the world, and their GDP is growing pretty rapidly. They're going to be challenging us in 10 years. And they have brought in this idea of indigenous production, of not being dependent upon anybody else, and of trying to dominate markets like steel and aluminum and chemicals. So they're creating a new world. We have to figure out how to respond. The folks, the free traders I talk to, who they're sort of living in a 1950s era of the Marshall Plan and the U.S. as the supreme economy. Nobody else challenges us, and we create business by giving aid and opening our borders to others. That world's changed now. There are many strong economies. So we need to take action. And you know, I want to say we're not talking about stopping trade. I mean, I believe in trade. I think that, you know, many companies, even Chinese companies, make unique products that Americans want to buy and should buy it. But I believe in managed, intelligent trade. And we need to have a steel industry. We need to have a successful automotive industry, a successful microchip industry, et cetera. So we need to be more intelligent than we used to be. Now, you're asking a good question when you say, will there be a trade war? And my answer to that is today we import $500 billion more than we export. Other countries have a lot more to lose in terms of markets and business than we do. If we stopped importing any single segment of products from China, Germany, Mexico, any of the countries that we run big deficits with, they would suffer a lot more pain than we would. We've already suffered that pain over the last 20 years. I mean, all of your listeners in industrial cities and towns around the country know what I'm talking about when I say the U.S. has already suffered. So I think people in other countries are going to look at this, and they're going to look at the newspaper talk about trade wars, and they're going to say, no, we don't want a trade war. We would lose more than America would lose. Therefore, they come to the negotiating table and they say, okay, what do you really want, United States? And that's where we need a tough team. And I'm very pleased to see Robert Lighthizer there at the ITC. He is a great veteran trade negotiator. He's been a lawyer and a trade negotiator for 30 years, back to the days of Reagan when we actually won some significant victories on the trade front. So that's the perspective I've got. We're not going to have a trade war. We need to get into a new trade world where we trade more intelligently, where we say the United States really needs a manufacturing industry, and we need to rebuild some of those sectors.
Okay, so, and along those lines, Jeff, because I know you're a big follower of this, you see a lot of international companies, I would say, reaffirming or actually recommitting to the U.S., opening new factories or pledging to open new factories. We look at Foxconn, which is a Taiwanese company, which is the biggest contractor for the iPhone, even though it's made in China. You think that's, I don't think that's a coincidence, do you?
No, I think that is great news. What Foxconn is doing in Wisconsin is incredibly positive and optimistic. It makes me optimistic. And, you know, what are we talking about there? 10 to 12,000 jobs, I think. And, yeah, and building, and but strategically, building display panels for electronics. I mean, as we know, it's a complex supply chain. In the last 20 years, we've allowed the entire supply chain to migrate to Asia. And we can get it back step by step. And not completely. As I said, I believe in trade. There are certain things we should continue to buy from overseas, but we need a rational balance. And Foxconn recognizing that, hey, America now cares. And, you know, both the federal government and the state of Wisconsin have made the right moves to entice Foxconn to open there. And, you know, there are other things we need to do. And you mentioned the dollar. The dollar is too high. We need to get the dollar down. We need to have tax reform. So it's a little more expensive to import and a little more economical to produce at home. There are many changes we can and should make over the next few years, which can bring back manufacturing. And I think, you know, electronics just stands to reason. I mean, we are the world's number one producer of software. I mean, I live in California. There's no city in the world that produces software that is as powerful and innovative as what we do in California. 30 years ago, the hardware came with the software. Intel and Compaq manufactured here in America using that software. It makes sense to go back to a situation where much of the hardware is manufactured close to the software. And Foxconn's move is a first step in that direction.
Yeah, sounds like a good portent of things to come here, Jeff. People want to find out more about what you're doing, more about the center. Where's the best place to go?
Yeah, thank you very much. So the Coalition for Prosperous America is an organization of manufacturers, labor unions, and farm groups and individuals, and we're all dedicated to one thing, which is improving the trade situation so as to rebuild manufacturing industry. And you can check us out at prosperousamerica.org, and you can join and you can support us and you can read about what we're doing, where our team is in Washington every day explaining and battling with people at both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue to make sure they understand the importance of these issues. Yeah, well, prosperousamerica.org. We'd love more support. Thank you.
Well, you're definitely not dealing with the best and the brightest in Washington these days, that's for sure. So you have an uphill battle, but hopefully the public sentiment is behind it. Any questions for Jeff, myself? Email us at kl@kerrylutz.com, and that goes for any other show you've heard on FSN. The Twitter feed's at Kerry Lutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network, where we try to put in some irreverent news that will give you a couple chuckles and maybe think a little bit. Jeff, it's always a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Kerry. Good to be here.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.